Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Biden touts his successes at the State of the Union.
2 years ago, the economy was reeling. I stand here tonight after we've created, with the help of many people in this room, 12 million new jobs, more jobs created in 2 years than any president's created in 4 years.
Plus, Ukraine's president makes his second overseas trip since the invasion, and Microsoft ups the ante on the AI game. It's Wednesday, February 8th. I'm Peter Granitz with the Wall Street Journal, filling in for Luke Vargas. And here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The United States posted its largest trade deficit ever last year. Data from the Commerce Department show the country imported nearly $950 billion more worth of goods than it exported. That is an increase of more than 12% from the previous year. President Joe Biden did not mention the deficit in his annual State of the Union address last night, but he did vow to spur more American production and decrease the dependency on other countries.
And on my watch, American roads, bridges, and American highways are going to be made with American products as well.
We'll have more on the State of the Union later in the show. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is visiting the UK today. He'll address Parliament and visit Ukrainian troops training in the country. It's only his second known trip outside of Ukraine since the war began nearly a year ago. He visited the U.S. in December. On Wednesday, the British government announced it would provide Ukraine with longer-range capabilities to strike Russian targets. The UK government has repeatedly urged NATO allies to boost support for Ukraine by providing more lethal weaponry and funds. Microsoft is incorporating a bot similar to ChatGPT on the Bing homepage. You can ask it questions, even about recent news events, and it'll respond in sentences that seem like they were written by a human. The Microsoft announcement comes ahead of a similar update from Google in Paris today. There, Google plans to detail its new search features powered by artificial intelligence. Journal Tech columnist Joanna Stern sat down with Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella to discuss the new AI bot and the rivalry with Google.
Look, at the end of the day, we're grounded in the fact that, you know, Google dominates this space. And so I am thrilled for finally some competition. So I feel like a new race is starting with a complete new platform technology. And now it's a question of us and them actually innovating, releasing things into the real world, and let's see, because I'm excited for the users to have choice finally and a real competitive race out there.
You can hear more from that interview with Satya Nadella in our sister podcast, The Tech News Briefing. And King James has a new jewel in his crown. LeBron James, last night, became the NBA's all-time leading scorer. He topped Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who held the record for nearly 40 years. James took the top spot in his 20th season in the league. He scored his 38,388th point in the third quarter last night, but his Lakers went on to lose to the Oklahoma City Thunder. And on deck for today, we get a take on the gig economy when Uber releases earnings after the bell. We'll also hear from media giants Fox and Disney, plus earnings from Robinhood and pharmaceutical chain CVS. Companies that are in the business of paying cash for homes are struggling. These so-called power buyers pay cash for a house and then sell the home to a buyer for the same price plus a fee. When rates were low and home prices surged, those companies were popular with buyers looking for a leg up. But now rates are higher and power buyers are feeling the pain. Will Parker covers housing for the Journal and he joins us from New York. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Will, I want to take a step back here because a lot of people are likely unfamiliar with power buyers. Can you tell us why a home buyer would have a third party purchase a house for them?
Yeah, so these companies, the idea behind them was they do different things to make home buyers and sellers more competitive. And one of the main ways they did that was to help people buy homes with cash, especially when the housing market was really booming about 2 years ago. People who made offers on homes with cash instead of a mortgage tended to win. So these companies would either back your offer with a letter saying that we can buy this house in cash fast if they don't, or they would just go ahead and buy it for you, and then you could get a mortgage and buy it back from them sort of on your own terms.
And I'm guessing they're not doing so well now that rates are, in some cases, double what they were a year ago.
Well, what started to happen last year as the market cooled off was some of these power buyers that would make these cash advances on behalf of home buyers, they ended up owning homes because their customers no longer wanted to buy the house that they had said they were going to buy in the first place. So that put some companies in a difficult position. Some of the other ones, what they would do is for people who are moving to a new home, they would guarantee the sale of your previous home. And if it didn't sell, they would buy it. And the longer that houses stayed on the market, not selling, the more often some of these companies were having to then take money out of their own pocket and buy the houses. And those houses have been losing value, like a lot of homes have over the course of the last year. So some of these companies in the meantime have sort of reduced their overall activity and are kind of going back to the drawing board to figure out how they can make tweaks to their services to make more sense in a more normal housing market.
Do they have long-term sustainability for the next run-up?
These companies feel really confident that there will always be some amount of demand for an intermediary like this that makes the home sales process either faster or easier, especially for people who are trying to move from one house to another and want some assurance that they're going to be able to sell their previous home. But there's a lot of these companies. A lot of them sprouted up out of nowhere, grew really fast, raised a bunch of venture capital from investors, have a lot of debt. And so there's a pretty strong sense that there will be either some mergers, probably some companies that won't survive. And so while there probably will be a place for this kind of business in the housing market, there may not be as many businesses doing it as there have been.
That is Will Parker. He covers the housing market for us. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And coming up, Joe Biden's State of the Union. What's possible, what's not, and what's it all mean anyways? That's after the break.
Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
President Joe Biden laid out his vision for the country last night. In his annual State of the Union address, Biden touted the accomplishments of his first 2 years in office with a particular focus on the economy.
But we're better positioned than any country on earth right now. But we have more to do.
And instead of offering a broad new policy agenda, he called on Congress to build on what's already been passed. It's a reflection of newly divided Washington. Our DC reporter Daniela Cheslow was in the Capitol last night, and she joins us now. Good morning, or I should say good evening to you.
Hello, Peter.
Daniela, what was the mood? How did it feel in the Capitol last night?
Well, Biden was facing a joint session of the House and Senate. As you mentioned, the Republicans have just won control of the House, and Biden opened with a friendly tone. He told the new Republican House Speaker, Kevin McCarthy, "Speaker, I don't want to ruin your reputation, but I look forward to working with you." And he tried to find a vision that could unite both parties. Peter, I was struck by the notes of cooperation in this vision. Biden mentioned he signed more than 300 bipartisan laws since he took office. Now, his polls aren't great, but tonight was the chance that Biden could tell his own story. So he touted 12 million new jobs created in his first 2 years, leading to a historically low unemployment rate. And he tried to tell a story of what he called a blue-collar blueprint for rebuilding America.
Well, he signed those 300 pieces of bipartisan legislation when Democrats had control of both chambers of Congress. Now, Republicans control the House, and they've already started to lay the contours of the debate they're going to have about raising the debt ceiling. What did Biden say about doing that in federal spending in his speech? Because that's going to be the first really big fight we see, isn't it?
That's right. Well, Biden noted that under President Trump, Congress raised the debt ceiling 3 times without preconditions. And then he said Republicans wanted to hold the economy hostage and sunset Medicare and Social Security. That did not go down well. Let's have a listen.
Instead of making the wealthy pay their fair share, some Republicans want Medicare and Social Security to sunset. I'm not saying it's a majority.
Georgia Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene called Biden a liar. And I should note there have been some Republicans in the past who suggested they could reclassify Social Security and Medicare as discretionary spending, but this did not seem to be an option tonight. I asked Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell if Republicans wanted to sunset Medicare. He gave me a one-word answer, no, and I heard a similar thought from Mitt Romney of Utah.
Republicans are absolutely committed to maintaining Social Security and Medicare.
Now, Republicans haven't united around what they would want to cut in order to balance the budget and agree to raise the debt ceiling. And Biden put forward ideas the GOP might not like raising taxes on the biggest corporations in the U.S. and on the wealthiest individuals. Republicans have called for repealing extra funding that Congress passed for the Internal Revenue Service.
So the president kind of had a tough balancing act, right? Like he had to tout the economy's successes, but all the while recognizing that prices continue to rise. What did the president say about inflation?
Well, the numbers on inflation have been working in his favor a little bit. He talked about how the prices of gas and food are coming down. And that's a sentiment that we heard also from Fed Chair Jerome Powell last week. But on the other hand, prices are still high, and Biden called for capping the price of insulin, making some health insurance subsidies permanent, and he looked for other ways to save Americans money, like a new bill preventing junk fees charged by hotels and cell phone companies and concert ticket sellers. This bill hasn't been passed, but Biden said Americans are tired of being played for suckers.
And Daniela, it wasn't just all domestic, though, right? The U.S.-China relationship remains tense after Secretary of State Antony Blinken canceled his trip to China this week after the U.S. shot down what it called a surveillance balloon. Did Biden lay out any path for relations with Beijing going forward?
Biden didn't directly mention the balloon, but he did say that, as we made clear last week, if China threatens our sovereignty, we will act to protect our country. We heard a lot more on Biden using China as a foil for his plans to recharge American manufacturing. He talked about the CHIPS Act that's encouraging domestic chip production. And he also said that China is a reason for Americans to unite.
How'd that play in the chamber last night?
You know, it played well, but I would say that before his speech, Republicans were talking about hammering Biden over China and over border security, painting the Democrats with Biden as their leader as soft on security.
Daniela, did you get the sense that this was the kickoff of President Joe Biden's reelection campaign?
Well, Biden hasn't formally announced. We did see themes emerge at the State of the Union that we can imagine would animate any sort of future presidential run from him. Remember, he came into office on the back of national protests over the police killing of George Floyd. And Biden called out in the audience the parents of Tyree Nichols, a black man who was killed by police recently in Memphis. Biden hasn't called for defunding police, but he did urge Congress to pass laws to hold police accountable for crimes. And this is part of his appeal to the Democratic base. We also heard a promise to advance abortion rights. He said he would veto any congressional ban on abortion. He called for comprehensive immigration reform. He advocated an act to guarantee workers the right to form a union. He called for sick days, paid family and medical leave, and restoring child tax credits. Now, that's a long list, and these were priorities of his when Democrats controlled both chambers of Congress. They will not get any easier now that Republicans won control of the House. But it does resonate with the core values of Biden's voters. And if he runs again, I think we'll hear a lot more of it.
That is the Journal's Daniela Cheslow. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And finally, the latest wave in the college sports arms race has athletic departments launching their own streaming platforms, like the University of Arkansas, which launched Hogs Plus a year ago and is already reaping the benefits. Lane Higgins covers college sports for the Journal. She says the unique behind-the-scenes content is a way to promote university teams and make some money.
Part of it is a play to increase revenue for the university by getting people to subscribe, but also trying to build fandom. Because if you have people that are maybe more invested in an Olympic sport or like a women's basketball team that might not get as much mainstream coverage, then maybe they'll buy tickets and maybe that'll convert into donations. And it's just kind of a way to sort of pander to the fans, but also it can be a huge thing for recruiting. And I think that these streaming services allow them to sort of have that. And especially in this era where athletes can sign endorsement deals and make money off of their name, image, and likeness, this is just one way to build their platform and help them do that.
And that's what's news for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Peter Granitz with the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Charles Schwab. Decisions made in Washington can affect your portfolio every day. But what policy changes should investors be watching? Washington Wise is an original podcast for investors from Charles Schwab that unpacks the stories making news in Washington and how they may affect your finances and portfolio. Listen at schwab.com/washingtonwise.